The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Off and running. Another big week. To email the program, send your comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll try and later on in the program today to just give you some listener response, if you'll listen up for that in the second segment. And also, we'll update you on the response we're getting to the television program here in the UK. We've had a couple of huge weekends for television here in the UK, and I'll update you on the record response that we received last week, and then also tell you where we are in the Mystery of the Ages goal. This past weekend, we repeated the program, the most important book since the Bible, and that repeat actually outperformed the original airing back in August, the end of August, I think. So stay tuned for all of those figures and updates coming up at the top of the second segment. As I said, we'll also get into quite a bit of listener feedback in that second segment. Well, lots to update you on with respect to some of the headlines, what's been happening in the news over this, in the United States anyway. It's been a holiday weekend with Thanksgiving. But a lot has been going on. This first bit here from the Clarion Project says that the FBI is tracking 48 ISIS suspects in the United States, and that there's something like 1,000 active cases relating to possible terrorist activity. And we've told you about the monitoring that's going on here in the UK as well. In some cases, the lack of monitoring, given the threat level here. But the same is true in the United States. All of these active cases, and the U.S. monitoring 48 Islamic State suspects. How much longer before a Paris-style attack comes to the United States or to the U.K.? In the case of America, just look how soft the current administration's policies are on terrorism, on terrorist-sponsoring nations, or radical Islam. In January 2006, we wrote at the Trumpet magazine that America's strategy to defeat Islamist terrorism was destined to fail. This is almost 10 years ago now. It was destined to fail as it strove, quote, not to eliminate, but to understand and appease the enemy. That's what we wrote in 2006. That's at the tail end of the Bush administration. And now this current administration, I mean, it's taken America's foreign policy to a whole new level of appeasement. And we told you where this was headed, going back even to 2006. In fact, you can go back to the early stages of the Iraq War in 2003, and even the beginning of the war against the so-called war against terrorism in 2001. And we were telling you right from the start. Well, for one, we weren't going after the head of the snake. But more important still was the fact that your Bible prophesies of America's demise and of the rise of the King of the South, leading radical Islam, as well as other powerful movements in the world that we've followed on this program as well. This next story here from The Guardian, the Chinese yuan, its currency, that it's likely to be added to the IMF's special basket of currencies. The Guardian says China hopes this stamp of approval will improve yuan's desirability among investors and undermine hegemony of U.S. dollar as a global reserve currency. Where have you heard this discussed before? the decline of the dollar, and what happens when the U.S. dollar is no longer the global reserve currency. Here again, we've been preparing you for this. The Guardian says China's efforts to make the yuan an international currency on a par with the U.S. dollar is to receive a fillip with the International Monetary Fund, widely expected to add it to a special basket of global currencies. And then it mentions the currencies in this basket, the dollar, the Japanese yen, the sterling, and the euro. And so here it looks like the IMF is set to put the yuan or the yuan on par with the dollar. You think about Tim Thompson. We've mentioned him before, particularly with respect to his many articles in the 1990s and early 2000s on the economy. He wrote in April 2000, as soon as America is no longer a safe place for foreign money, that money will be gone. And once the foreign money is gone, it will leave us with a mountain of debt that we cannot repay. That's all that's, in many ways, that's all that's propping it up, is that foreign money, that dependence on the dollar, the fact that the American dollar, the U.S. dollar, has been the world's reserve currency for so long. We're seeing that beginning to change. Robert Morley warned back in April of 2006. He said one day soon, foreign nations will not have the motivation to support the dollar and America's massive deficits, because to do so simply will not benefit them any longer. Once it doesn't benefit them, then they will abandon the United States. They will abandon the dollar. What happens when the U.S. dollar is no longer the world's leading currency, the reserve currency of the world? Already you see another currency being added to this so-called IMF basket. Well, as I say, we've been preparing you for this. We've been preparing you for a number of things, in fact. As we've discussed over the last few weeks, we've been preparing you for a much stronger leader to come out of Germany. This from Reuters, November 28th. The leader of Germany's anti-immigrant AfD party, riding a wave of public anger against Chancellor Angela Merkel's asylum policy, on Saturday called on her to resign for throwing the country's doors open to migrants. So this was going on over the weekend, over the holiday weekend there in the United States. As the leader of Germany's anti-immigrant party is calling upon Angela Merkel to resign, to step down. Merkel, step down. You can do it. Frauke Petry told some 600 AfD supporters, mainly gray-haired men, putting a new twist on Merkel's "We Can Do It" slogan. To those who doubt Germany can deal with the influx of migrants expected to reach 1 million this year. Petry, whose alternative for Germany is enjoying an improbable revival after nearly imploding in a power struggle, said her party stood a real chance of entering three new state parliaments next year and the national parliament for the first time in 2017. It says, finally, Petry drew at least four standing ovations with attacks on what she called Merkel's undemocratic decision to open Germany's borders to migrants who are expected to reach 1 million this year. So this is what the leader of that anti-immigrant party is saying. And then there's this new poll that's out in Germany that says that almost half of Germans say Merkel should step down. So almost a majority now believe this, are calling for this. 48% of German voters think that she should end her chancellorship. 48%. About that same figure say that she has mismanaged the refugee crisis. The attitude in Germany is changing. We've been saying this. It's changing all across Europe, in fact. This Bloomberg piece here speaks of France's anti-immigrant, anti-Euro National Front party could win two regions in local elections next month and might get as many votes as its conservative and centrist rivals combined, according to new opinion polls. Marine Le Pen, Le Pen's National Front would get 28% of votes in the first round of elections starting December 8th. That's according to these polls. It says the regional elections are the first political test for Hollande since the November 13 terrorist attacks in Paris that killed 130 people, with the country reeling from the violence and grappling with border controls. National Front candidates are showing a significant increase in support across the country. It's just like it is in Germany. It's just like it is in other nations in Europe. As the entire continent is undergoing a massive transformation. Here again, you go back to even just the beginning of this year, 10 or 11 months ago. And the scene is dramatically different now. The whole tone is different. Dramatically so. And isn't it amazing that even as we witness all of these earth-shaking events, isn't it incredible that you have representatives from 200 nations gathering in Paris this week? Paris, of all places, to try to reach some kind of consensus on the global warming threat. Many Western leaders believe that global warming is the greatest threat facing humanity. And their cheerleaders in the media, they're faithfully doing their part to whip up this global warming hysteria. Notice what the New York Times wrote. This is a couple of days ago. I guess it would be Saturday. After two decades of talks, this is how the Times piece starts. This is the lead. After two decades of talks that failed to slow the relentless pace of global warming, negotiators from almost 200 countries are widely expected to sign a deal in the next 2 weeks to take concrete steps to cut emissions. It says the prospect of progress, any progress, has elicited cheers in many quarters, including the New York Times, we could add. Slow the relentless pace of global warming. That's the first sentence in that piece. And here they are meeting in Paris, and we're barely 2 weeks removed from the bullets and the bombs and the radical Islamists that killed 130 people in France, in Paris. And those bullets and those bombs and the human nature that's behind it all, that poses a much greater threat to humanity than anything that man has done to foul up the environment. And man has certainly done a lot to foul up the environment. There's no doubting that. But human nature, together with the proliferation of these nuclear weapons, weapons of mass destruction, that is the greatest threat facing humanity. It is. It certainly is. And when you think about what the Bible prophesies in Jeremiah 30 and Daniel 12 and Matthew 24, all of these prophetic passages that talk about it being worse than at any time in the history of human civilization. When you think about those prophecies and what Jesus was actually saying there in Matthew 24 in verses 21 and 22, then in so many ways, you can see how this global warming hysteria is such a huge distraction. It's just an endless debate. The endless debate over this is just a major distraction from the existential threat facing humanity because of our inability to get along with fellow man because of the fact that we've been cut off from the tree of life from the very beginning. Because of the fact that man has rejected his creator. He hasn't established a relationship with God. He lacks the Spirit of God, combining with the human spirit, as it says in Romans 8:16, as is discussed in 1 Corinthians 2 as well. We lack that spiritual dimension, together with the human spirit God's given to all of us. And so we see a world that's about to explode in violence. And yet you look around at all these distractions. Satan is a master at distracting us from what is really and truly the most, in this case, significant threat facing humanity. He's a master broadcaster. He deceives. Look at all that we've seen in recent weeks that's going on college campuses. Brown University just announced that it plans to spend $100 million over the next decade to address diversity and racism. $100 million over the next 10 years. You think about how few people we have supporting this work, and just a fraction of that 100 million figure that we have to work with each year, $100 million to address diversity and racism on campus. Over at Cornell, the black students there, they have come together and they have delivered a list of demands to the president. They want more black faculty members. They want more black administrators, more black staff members. They want more involvement in the hiring process, these students. In Chicago, I forget the name of the university there, but there's a professor who published a scholarly article. She's a white professor, by the way. And she calls whiteness, her own whiteness, I presume, a disease. It's a disease. Of course, we've heard our own president talk about the DNA, the racism in the DNA of white people. Last week, I believe this was on the Trumpet Hour, one of the panelists there was talking about just the reaction to this within the white community, all these white student union pages that are popping up all over Facebook. It's building to a clash. And considering all the problems with modern education, considering the problems with higher education, what a distraction. What a distraction. In so many ways. There was a piece at the American Thinker just this morning. It says higher education is a hot topic because of bloated tuitions, ruinous student debt, growing scandals over bogus research, useless curricula, declining academic freedom, and the abuse of an underclass of adjuncts who do most of the teaching. It says if we talk about any of these real problems, certain people will have to answer for their misdeeds. Among those responsible, we must count the administrators who have wasted money on administrators and saddled their alumni with debt. The Democrats who have used colleges as their racketeering right arm for decades. And corrupt cadillos of the sort we find peppered on any university campus. They don't want to talk about how bad they've been for the last 50 years. They'd rather talk about racism. So they partner up with politicians, organizers, grant administrators, rabble-rousers, and garden-variety scum to draw up plans for lots of street distractions. Rile up the commoners. Make it about some racial issue that will get everybody furious. Fake a hate crime if you have to. Do anything you can, this article is saying, to distract people from what is really destroying colleges. Saddling graduates with debt. Astronomical costs all across the board. I've got another piece here from the Washington Post, just from last week. Stephen Perlstein, he says, while students are paying more, they're getting less, at least as measured by learning outcomes, intellectual engagement, time with professors, and graduation rates. And although students are working more hours at outside jobs and receiving more tuition assistance, student debt now exceeds credit card debt and has become something of a national obsession. So you would expect universities to have embarked on the fundamental restructuring that nearly every other sector has done to reduce cost and improve quality. They haven't. They haven't. They haven't. The problems persist. They continue. That's what he's saying here. All these problems. It says among faculty members, there remains a deeply held view that equates spending with quality. Yeah, just throw more money at the problem. Get more government funding. There remains a deeply held view. This is what the faculty believes. A deeply held view that equates spending with quality, considers accountability an assault on academic freedom, and sees productivity as merely code for charlatan anti-intellectualism. It says, for their part, administrators cling to hopes of boosting enrollment and fundraising while waiting for the current budget cycle to pass. And then this final paragraph here, it says, the American university is a grand political accommodation, says Richard Vedder, an Ohio University economist and founder of the Center for College Productivity and Affordability. College presidents, he argues, appease faculty members by giving them control over what and how they teach. They appease students and parents with high grades and good facilities. They appease alumni and with expensive sports teams. They appease politicians with shiny new research centers. The idea is to buy off any group that might upset the political equilibrium. And so, changing these deep-seated flaws, it never does happen. And anytime these flaws are anywhere close to being exposed, well, going back to that American Thinker piece, there's nothing like a big distraction, some hot-button issue, to get people to lose sight of all the flaws, of all the problems that are bringing these educational institutions down. Look at just one last example. I don't have any articles to go with this, but look at all that we've seen in recent years. Even here more recently, with all that's happened in Chicago over the last week. How far and wide the liberal elites and the mainstream media will go to fixate on one injustice, whether real or imagined, and there's plenty that have been imagined, but all it does is obscure the real problems that are destroying America's cities. And so all the attention goes to the one person in a position of authority, the one policeman who's corrupt or bad, the one individual who has abused his power. And meanwhile, all of these other monumental problems, they continue. They get worse. We throw money at them. thinking that if it has more funding, if it has more money, then everything gets magically fixed. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial. In Edmond, Oklahoma, the live stream is available right around the world if you have internet access. Just log on to kpcg.fm. Send us your feedback through email, td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program.
The Bible is like a book that had been sort of cut up into about 2,000 or 3,000 pieces, and you have to get them all put together in the right order, or you can't understand them. This book puts them together. And yet this book is only a synopsis. You could say it's the gist of the Bible, the synopsis. It doesn't cover all of it, but it covers the main thread of the Bible, so you can understand the Bible and understand the other details when you read them in the Bible. You aren't going to get the full meat of this book in one reading. This is a book that after you've read it, you can read it a second time, and then later a third time. And I hope it'll be a blessing to you. I hope you will enjoy it. It'll give you great happiness and enjoyment. I hope you'll enjoy reading it. And I hope more than any other book you've ever read, except the Bible. Will you forgive me if I get a little bit of thrill that this was then done? Book is out now. Today's a pretty big day in my life. Well, I can hand copies of this book out to each of you.
That's the clip we included in the program, the TV program, the most important book since the Bible. Of course, that was Herbert Armstrong presenting that book to the sophomore class at Ambassador College back in August or September, I think it was, of 1985. And we used that, as I say, in the video we produced for the program over here in the UK. Before I get to that one, though, just to update you on responses from last weekend's program, Herbert Armstrong's Signature Prophecy, the program in which we offered the new booklet on the Holy Roman Empire in prophecy. We added 11 more requests to the record response from last weekend, which brought the total to 236. 236 responses to that program from a week ago. The all-time record response here for the UK. Now, with respect to the most important book since the Bible, that one that had that Herbert Armstrong clip there that we just played for you, we originally aired that on August 29th and 30th. And so it's been about, I guess, what, September, October? It's been almost 3 months. And at the time that we aired that, this was, if you recall, it was the weekend that we had quite a bit of trouble with our phone system. A lot of the people that called in couldn't get through. We were able to get their numbers, their phone numbers from the system, even though we couldn't talk to them when they called in. And then we had to spend the next day or two trying to call them back and apologize to them for bothering them and so on. And in the midst of all of that, we still were able to collect 215 total requests for Mystery of the Ages as a result of that program. So to the program last week, all through the year, I mean, that was our highest response yet, 215, until last weekend's program on the Signature Prophecy. In any event, we play it again this past weekend, and it brought in 220 total requests, which is now our second highest response ever. So 215 the first time, 220 the second time, which means this one program, which has only played twice, has brought in a total of 435 requests for Mystery of the Ages, just from this one television program. Now, that's very encouraging, because I think at the start of the weekend, with the first airing of that repeat Saturday morning, the calls that were coming in, they were just maybe slightly above average, but then after Sunday's ring-in, and then together with that, we find out this morning that nearly 100 viewers texted us requests for the book. So we had all the phone calls, we had all the text messages, we had 10 or 15, I think, that ordered it on the website. But just 100, I think it was 95 to be exact, 95 people seeing the program and the text number, texting a request for Mystery of the Ages. That has to be a record. I'll have to look at those figures from earlier in the year to see. But 95 people that we didn't even talk to because they just texted us their address and said, we want Mystery of the Ages. Now, as far as the MOA goal is concerned, before the weekend, this past weekend, the Mystery of the Ages goal stood at 1,520 for the year. And so now adding 220 to the mix, we've taken in 1,740 requests for the year. 1,740. Now, I'll just tell, between me and you, I'll just tell you that Saturday morning when the call volume was a little bit lower than I expected, I had pretty much concluded that, well, maybe we can advertise Mystery of the Ages one more time and we'll probably just fall a couple hundred short of the 2,000 goal, which is still nothing to sneeze at to get 1,800, 1,900 of those books out. But now, after getting the total figures, adding 220 to the 1,520 and getting this close, I mean, I think it's well worth advertising Mystery of the Ages these last two weekends of the year. We've got four weekends left. The one coming up, the program we have prepared for it, has to do with our trip to Israel last week. And then after that, we'd like to put together a program on Christmas, The Plain Truth About Christmas, which then would leave two weekends left. And doubling up that way, I'm sure the caller response is going to be a little bit lower the second time around. But I think it's well worth it. We're this close, 1740. We've just got 260 to go. We may have more trickle in this week that pushes this past weekend close to the record. We just need 16 to tie. I think we had 11 roll in last week that bumped up the record to 236. In any event, I think we have to go for it. Some of you have been out there listening and emailing us and talking to us and telling us how excited you are about this goal and how much you're praying for us to reach that goal. We haven't yet produced any programs for those final 2 weeks, but we'll be thinking about that in these next few days, in the next week or two, and we'll certainly let you know. It's something to be praying about. I mean, 260 is still a lot to go after for those final 2 weeks of the year, particularly since we have advertised Mystery of the Ages more than any other work this past year. We'll keep you posted with these decisions and these productions and these schedules, these goals, these figures, right here on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This first email response we got from Suriname from last week, it says, it was great hearing about Jerusalem. I hope and trust your trip to Judea was most productive. Mr. Palmer did a great work filling in. Thank you for your effort in this last hour work. Richard Palmer, of course, filled in, I think, on three programs last week. We had Brad McDonald, who was out sick for a few days. He was going to fill in once or twice as well. In any event, we certainly do appreciate not only those two, but everyone who helps with the research and the preparations for these programs. This response, again, comes from this next one, I mean, comes from another one who appreciated Mr. Palmer's efforts. Thank you, Mr. Palmer, for a wonderful program. Your breakdown of the motivating principles behind our human tendency to protect our own makes it easier to understand how Satan is bringing about this 10-union beast. I'm able to see it clearer. I also want to thank you for an amazing presentation of our need to be truly thankful toward God. I think this is in response to Friday's program. Thanksgiving has long been my favorite of our national holidays, and knowing how it came about just makes it more meaningful. Yes, you have to go back to Abraham Lincoln, 1863, I think it was. I appreciate all that KPCG and God's work is doing. Keep up the good work. This next one here comes from Arizona. She's from Tucson. She helps out with some of the calls that we receive for the Key of David there in the United States. And she says, I absolutely am so happy with everything you present, especially the Trumpet Daily. I listen to this program online at the trumpet.com website and on SoundCloud. I'm obligated to listen to local TV stations to get the news around Arizona, so I stay informed. But I know the untainted truth comes from the Philadelphia Church of God. This next email, it comes from a woman in Trinidad. It says, many times I make attempts to make comments on the new radio station, but as I listen to the positive comments that you receive, I just say, wow, that's exactly how I feel. Those are my thoughts. And so I guess that's kept her from sending in a response to this point. In any event, now she's moved to respond. She says, I just want you to know that I deeply appreciate this work in its entirety. I listen to the programs in the morning before work. I use it as my morning boost to joyfully face the day. The Music for Life program is truly guiding my appreciation for God's culture. Live by every word helps keep me grounded in the Word of God. It's a good daily Bible study. What a daily refresher to keep my thoughts structured. The Trumpet Daily and the Trumpet Hour, they marvelously unravel the confusions of this world and help me more appreciate Bible prophecy and to draw closer to God in humility. And she says, and the Key of David program will always be the highlight of the week. Everything is so unified. Everything fits together just so. This next one here comes from a woman in Sydney, Australia. You can see, you probably see this every time we read letters, that they come from all over the world. Suriname, Arizona, Trinidad, Australia. It says here, thank you for your daily broadcast of what is happening in the world today and how it relates to Bible prophecy. I read the United States and Britain in prophecy when America was a great world power, thinking at the time it would only be history repeating itself. Even so, it was still unimaginable. And I never dreamt that I would still be alive when its demise would be taking place. Herbert Armstrong was a true prophet of God, and I'm grateful that with God's help, you have been able to take over where he left off. I look forward each day with anticipation to listen to your radio program, which enables me to inform my friends of what is truly happening in the world today. This next one comes from Oregon. This individual has written in a few times now, a very enthusiastic supporter. They're in the state of Oregon, in the great northwest of the United States. What a powerful week of inspired messages in God's work this week. The Live by Every Word program has had some amazing messages about law, grace, and salvation. I was spending some time with my sister this Thanksgiving, and she had an interest in my beliefs, God's laws, and she had some great questions for me. She asked me some of the most important questions a human being can ever ask concerning the law and the Sabbath. So I answered what I could, but invited her to listen to part one of Mr. Davis's series on the subject on my laptop at thetrumpet.com. She enjoyed it and followed along with me in the Bible. She learned a lot and began to understand that what people teach and what Christ and the apostles taught are very different. It says later, I just finished the latest installment of the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, and I'd do well to listen to that message every day till Christ returns. This is the one we had on Thanksgiving and counting your blessings from last Friday. He says, my prayer is that anyone listening to these programs will grow and apply these messages. These messages are what the likes of Paul, John, Jude, and even Christ would be proclaiming if they were here. That's because this is the exact same church. And then finally, this comes from one of our listeners in Kansas. And he says, I've been quite impressed with the insight, understanding, and timeliness of the Trumpet's articles, as well as the broadcasts on KPCG. They are incredibly deep, well-researched, and well-delivered, whether in print or on the radio. Spot on. However, notice this, however, I'm frustrated. More people don't avail themselves of these deep treasure troves of truth. I think many tune out when the Bible or prophecy is referenced. Those who do have a keen interest in current events tend to think that belief in prophecy is worse than an uneducated superstition. Yeah, that's true. There's many out there who are at least observing world events, but they miss the meaning. They miss the events of true significance because they reject the Bible and Bible prophecy as superstition. He writes, people want to believe in themselves or other people for answers instead of divine revelation, which they dismiss offhand. Finally, it says here, these great articles and broadcasts go unread and unheard by the vast majority. It is frustrating. So few are reached. On the other hand, he says finally, on the other hand, it is indeed an honor and privilege to back and support this marvelous work and wonder. I'm praying for more coverage, recognition, and prominence for God's work. And that's important because, like I was saying in the first segment, there are a lot of distractions that are out there. There are a lot of obstacles preventing people from getting through to the truth of God. You can take what I was saying there in segment one and apply it on a much more personal, individual level. Because we all have to be careful to avoid distractions, to make sure that we understand and see and attend to the things each day that are the most important. Think about Matthew 6 and what Jesus said there about the one whose eye or mind is single and focused. You can't serve God and mammon. We do have to have the right priorities. I saw this article yesterday in the New York Times by Tony Schwartz. It got my attention because he wrote a book I read some years ago, and I've given bits of it, some of the information in that book, to our students at the college. The name of that book, I think it's on the back of this article here. The name of the book was The Way We're Working Isn't Working. Not all of the information in there is spot on, but he talked about in his book about how to avoid distraction, how to build good habits, just practical common sense. A lot of it based on biblical principles. But this article here that he wrote for the New York Times, he titled it Addicted to Distraction, and he introduced the piece, this essay, by talking about himself. This individual that, if you read his book, you'd think, well, he's got a lot of it together. He's pretty disciplined. He's pretty focused. He's pretty productive and efficient as far as the leaders of this world go, I guess. But he says here, one evening early this summer, I opened a book and found myself reading the same paragraph over and over a half dozen times before concluding that it was hopeless to continue. I simply couldn't marshal the necessary focus. I was horrified. All my life, reading books had been a deep and consistent source of pleasure, learning, and solace. Now the books I regularly purchased were piling up ever higher on my bedside table, staring at me in silent rebuke. I think we can all identify with this. Here's a man who came upon some distractions. It says, during the workday, I checked my email more times than I cared to acknowledge and spent far too much time hungrily searching for tidbits of new information about the presidential campaign with the election then still more than a year away. He was becoming addicted to distractions. He was missing the true significance of what he needed to attend to, of the projects, the tasks that he needed to complete. He said addiction, he goes on and talks about basically the internet as being one of the biggest distractions that we all face. He says addiction is the relentless pull to a substance or an activity that becomes so compulsive it ultimately interferes with everyday life. By that definition, nearly everyone I know is addicted in some measure to the internet. It has arguably replaced work itself as our most socially sanctioned addiction. And he goes on and gives some stats about just how many hours and hours and hours each day that people spend online, surfing, shopping, searching, social media. Then later he writes, denial is an addict's first defense. No obstacle to recovery is greater than the infinite capacity to rationalize our compulsive behaviors. After years of feeling I was managing myself reasonably well, I fell last winter into an intense period of travel while also trying to manage a growing consulting business. In early summer, it suddenly dawned on me that I wasn't managing myself well at all, and I didn't feel good about it. Beyond spending too much time on the internet and a diminishing attention span, I wasn't eating the right foods, I drank way too much diet soda, I was having a second cocktail at night too frequently, I was no longer exercising every day as I had nearly all my life. And so he took a turn for the worse in the way that he managed his time. He became addicted to distraction. It's something I think that we all can identify with. Who hasn't gone through periods where, because of travel or some new project or some new endeavor, just like even what we've had here at Edstone, it can take its toll. And so it's good. It's good to step back at times and to look at what it is that we're doing and to consider whether or not we're being taken away from what's truly important, from what matters the most, because of this pull or because of this distraction. Let me just take you through a few scriptures here before we conclude. He talks about, in that article, about things that, well, he kind of wanted to change everything all at once, which, again, I think a lot of us can identify with. But then he suggested just tackling one thing, eliminating one thing that's holding you back, or incorporating one new activity into your day-to-day routine or your weekly routine that will help your health, your energy, your focus, your family, whatever it might be. Just some practical tips there. But given the times that we're in, we need to be all the more urgent about making sure that our lives are in order and that we're attending to the things that we need to attend to. 1 Thessalonians 5 here in verse 1, it says, but of the times and the seasons, brethren, you have no need that I write unto you, for you yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so comes as a thief in the night. For when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes upon them. The world's in darkness. It has no idea what's coming. And there's plenty of distractions for human beings to get caught up in. Let me look at this past weekend. Look at all the craziness that you see always around Black Friday, always around this season, which Satan has convinced this world is so good and so helpful and upbuilding and family-oriented. And yet at this very time of year, you see a lot of hatred and violence. You see grown adults acting like little children in department stores. You see fighting. You see division. You see discouragement and depression. You see mountain loads of debt. You see lots and lots and lots of distractions. Notice what I've played this clip for you before. This, too, is from Herbert Armstrong. It's from one of his old radio programs. But notice what he said back in the 1950s or 60s.
You're living in terrifying times, and you probably don't realize it. You're just so interested in this apparent time of peace, and you like to get it out of your mind, and it's a time when we can have mechanical and material luxuries and gadgets and things, and we're so interested in those things. We're so self-centered in our own selves and other people and the things that our hands can make. In human interests, in television, in the new kind of movies that are coming out, in everything to amuse and entertain ourselves, we don't realize how empty our lives are either.
We don't realize it. We're too distracted. We're too caught up in this, that, or the other. And so step back. Think about the things that are getting in the way of your relationship with God or the relationships that you have inside of your home, your spouse, your children, your parents. Distractions, anything that takes you away from bringing every thought into the captivity of Christ, as the Bible says, it's a distraction. Anything that takes you away from what you should be doing, and God tells us in His instruction manual, He tells us in the Bible how we ought to be living. And we all fall short, myself included. We go through those moments, those lulls, where we could all sit down and write that article, that essay like Tony Schwartz did. Even ones writing the information, giving us what we need. Giving us sermons, giving us articles that we need. It's easy for any of us to be victims of distraction. To even become addicted to distraction. We are living in terrifying times, as Mr. Armstrong said there. Let me just finish over in Matthew 21. Actually, this is Luke 21. And verse 34 here, it says, "And take heed to yourselves, lest at any time your hearts be overcharged with surfeiting, drunkenness, and the cares of this life, so that that day come upon you unawares." See, distractions, they're everywhere. And because of them, people are going to be totally shocked and unprepared for what's coming. It's like a snare, as Jesus said there. It's a snare that's coming on all of them that dwell on the face of the earth. The world's about to explode. And yet most will be completely caught off guard. Jesus continued, "Watch you therefore, and pray always that you may be accounted worthy to escape all these things that shall come to pass, and to stand before the Son of Man." We've got to be watching and praying always. As my father wrote in the Epistles of Peter booklet, the worst crisis ever is about to give birth to a splendid new age. And there's going to be some intense pain leading up to it, but what a birth! Get our minds on that. Get our minds on the future, not just the prophecies of all that's going to come upon our peoples, but looking even beyond that. And let the urgency of the times we're in, let that motivate us to make the changes, to give up something that's holding us back, or to begin doing something that will help for us to be a better parent, a better husband, a better wife, a better father, a better mother, a better minister, a better member, a better servant, a better student, You can start small and build from there. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG, 101.3 on the FM dial. In Edmond, Oklahoma, the live stream's available at kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today. We'll see you again tomorrow.